Okay? You hear the see the things that are going up and down? Okay. Very good. The topic of tonight's shiur on the email or how it was announced was the history of halacha, which is a very large topic. We could spend 6 months on it if we had shiur twice a week. But we're gonna just do one little area in this large topic. And any other questions, feel free to ask during this year, after the year. We could have another year about these topics. The next year, Be'ez Hashem, probably be in about 3 weeks, we'll be in Yoni Purim. It'll probably be the Sunday before Purim. Purim's on a Friday, so it'll be the Sunday beforehand. And then Pesach, and the next couple of months are taken up with Yom Tovim. Right, yeah. So last year we had a shiur on Hilchos Pesach with, at the end, 10 minutes of Divrei Torah that I just gave the women. That the stuff that I didn't say to the men that they could use at the Seder. So I'll probably do something like that again. But, okay. So let's, just even before we get into the specific topic that I wanted to discuss tonight, which is about different stages of the Mesorah, of the halachic transmission throughout the ages, I wanted to do a little background, which some of it might be familiar to you, some of it you might remember from years ago studying in yeshiva. Just this single sheet that you have in front of you, that's just the heat, don't worry about it. The single sheet in front of you just has the Shalshalas HaMesorah, which is the chain of the Mesorah. A lot of times one is listening to a shiur, and from all the way from elementary school all the way through any shiur you would hear, you know, all the way until today, many times we hear a lingo, and nobody ever goes through in a systematic way, you know, what do we mean by these words, like the Rishonim, and the Achronim, and the Amoraim, and the Tanaim. It's just a quick synopsis and review, those who are familiar with it already, of the general stages of our Jewish history, specifically in terms of halacha. And if you just look on your sheet, the first, where it says Aleph on top, so that just in the middle where the arrows are, that's the first mission in Pirkei Avos, right? Everything starts at Har Sinai. That's the top of the first arrow. Har Sinai is where it all starts. Everything that we do today in the year 2005 is from that moment. Har Sinai, when we got the Kabbalah Satorah. From Har Sinai, obviously, went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe gave it from Har Sinai to Yeshua, to the arrow, Yeshua to the Zakenim. After Yeshua, it became, wasn't just a one-person show anymore. The Nevi'im, the Shoftim, and the whole period of Tanakh, and finally to the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. That is, all from the first mission in Pirkei Avos, that chain of halacha. But they were the ones that brought the halacha down to us, and that went by word of mouth all the way until Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, in about the year 200 of the Common Era, where it says Beis, he decided, he looked around, and we're going to talk about this a little more in a few minutes, but he decided that people, though we had Torah Shebichsav, we had Tanakh, that was what was written down up until that year. When they had the Beis HaMikdash, when they had both Batei Mikdash, there was no Gemara. There was no Mishnah when they had a Beis HaMikdash. Think about it, it's amazing, a life without Mishnah and Gemara. But the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era, or 68, Machlokas, scholars and Chazal. But around there, 68 to 70, it was destroyed, and the Mishnah wasn't written yet. The Mishnah wasn't written for another 130 years. So when they had a Beis HaMikdash, there was no Mishnah. There was no Gemara. They knew the halachas. It was transmitted from Rebbe to Talmud, from a teacher to student. But all of a sudden, around the year after, you know, there was the Churban HaBayis, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Bnei Yisrael started going to get to Galus. We didn't have a central place where we could gather. We didn't have a Beis HaMikdash. We didn't have a monarchy. We didn't have a king. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi looked around and said, "Oy vey, nothing's written down. There's no Sfarim on the shelf. What's going to happen if I don't remember something and my Rebbe's not here and I'm going to move away to another place? We're going to forget it." The Jewish history can only survive if there's a Torah. As those of you who went to the CM last night, that's what's taken us throughout the ages. It's the Torah. That's what keeps us going. So if Yehuda HaNasi says, "I have to do something, even though it's radical, even though it's never been done before, I have to write down something, laws of the Torah, even though it's Torah Shebal Peh, right? Mouth, it's supposed to be Torah Shebal Peh, but you know what? Jewish history will not be able to survive if I don't take these steps." So therefore, Yehuda HaNasi decided, "I have to write the Mishnah." And therefore, he went and gathered all the different discussions that were recorded in the different yeshivas and in the different Bati Medrash. And he took from in Bavel and places called Sura and Pumpadisa and all different places at that time. He took all the discussions and he decided what he was going to take, what was integral, what was needed to put into Mishnayos. And that's Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi by Beis around the year 200 of the Common Era. He wrote the Mishnah. He put together the Mishnah. He was a Tana. The people in the Mishnah are called the Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And if you just see on the line across, it says Brisa and Tosefta. Mishnah, Brisa, and Tosefta. Those words, those are different material from the same time period. A Tosefta, a Brisa, and a Mishnah are all the Tanaim. All throughout the Gemara, there's Mishnayis quoted, there's Brisas quoted, there's Tosefta's quoted. They're all from the Tanaim. It's all from the same time period. It's just that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he decided which material, which discussion he was going to put into Mishnayis, and which he wasn't going to. But like when the Gemara quotes something, that we're going to get to the Gemara in a minute, but when the Gemara quotes something from a Brisa, as it's called, that's also from the Tanaim, but just it's something that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't put into the Mishnah. So there could be a contradiction between the two, but they're from the same time period. The Mishnah, the word Brisa is an Aramaic word. Bra means outside, literally. Beis Reish Aleph. So Brisa means what was left outside the Mishnah. That's the word Brisa. Tosefta, Shorosh is Yosof, added on. Musaf is the tefillah that's added on Shabbos. Hosafa. So Tosefta is what the added on texts that were not included in the Mishnah. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He was the radical. It was a radical step at that time. There was nothing written down besides Tanakh. But he said, I have to, and therefore he wrote the Mishnah. And again, the Tanaim were the ones included in the Mishnah, the Brisa and the Tosefta, and that's from the year 200, again, about 130 years after the Churban of the Bayis Sheni. That's what we had. We had one sefer on the shelf called Mishnah. Mishnah, the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. Right? The six Sedarim, he split it up into six parts. Zeroi, Moi, Nashim, Nezikin, Kachim, Taros. The six parts, the little Mishnayis. That is what is called Mishnah. Yeah. Tosefta does. If you look in the back of every Gemara, we'll talk about Gemara in a minute, but it's in the back of every Gemara is the Tosefta on that Masechta. So if you look in the back of this Masechta, yeah, in the back, the last page of every Gemara, it's Tosefta. Right? Tosefta in the back. The Brises are not organized in any systematic form. They're just scattered all over the Gemara. But again, when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah, there was just the Mishnah. Some Tanaim must have put together the Tosefta. Some say it was Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Levi, but everybody mentioned in the Mishnah is a Tana. Tana is the word Shana. Mishnah and Tanaim is the same word. Shin and Tuf switch in Aramaic. So that's why Tanaim are in the Mishnah. It's really the same Shorish, means to learn. That was the first stage of the Masorah. Again, these are little tidbits that we never learn. We should learn this in third grade. But a lot of times, just these basics, you know, I teach my Talmidim in college. You know, a lot of them, you know, I call them sleep questions. You should wake up in your sleep and be able to ask these questions, and we should know it. It's something that it's at least I find in males' educations, again, in women's educations, they have they do a lot more, especially in terms of halacha, but at least in terms of this type of background, a lot of times it is lacking. But anyway, that is the Mishnah Brisa Tosefta. That's all about the year 200. That was the first stage of what was written down. After that, a couple hundred years later, the rabbis of that time period, known as the Amoraim, from the word Amar, right, the ones who say, they looked around and said, what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did is not enough. The Mishnah is not enough for Klal Yisrael to survive. We have to expand what is written. Nothing else was written down after the Mishnah. So we have to expand because we're still going to forget things. We have Mishnayis, but we still don't know what the Mishnayis mean, and we're not going to get confused. We're not going to know what the halacha is. So, two great rabbis, Ravina and Ravashi, if you look in about the year 500, a little before that, another group of Rabbanim tried to write a Gemara, started to write a Gemara. It is a smaller Gemara, and it is not as comprehensive. That's called the Talmud Yerushalmi, which is not so much learned today. We have the Talmud Yerushalmi, but it's not as learned as the Bavli, which we'll get to in a minute. But earlier, at a first stage, before the year 500 or so, if you see on the left side, it says Yerushalmi. That was put together by Rabbi Yochanan. So he wrote that. But a little after that, a more comprehensive Gemara was put together in Bavel. Not in Eretz Yisrael, in Bavel, which is Iraq today, and that's called the Talmud Bavli. And that is all these books that we have on the shelf, what we just had to see them on last night, that is the Talmud Bavli. On many, many Masechtos, we have the Talmud Bavli. Not on all of them. There are about 10 or 15 Masechtos of Mishnayis that do not have Gemara. That's why this big scene that we made last night, that they didn't, all the people who finished Daf Yomi, they did not learn all Mishnayis. they learned all Gemara, Talmud Bavli. But there's many Mishnayos that don't have Gemara, so everybody has to make sure to learn those Mishnayos too if they want to learn Kol HaTarakuba. But there are many, many Mishnayos that don't have Gemara. But on most Mishnayos, there is Gemara. That was, again, put together about 300 years after the Mishnah. That's the Gemara by Gimel. And we have the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli is the later one, the more comprehensive one, and that is why in most yeshivas, and the halacha comes from Talmud Bavli. That is what the source of most of our halacha is. Ravina and Ravashi were the two Amoraim that are known for putting together the Gemara. Again, what does that mean, putting together? They took all the discussions that were recorded in all the Bati Medrash all over the place, and they said how it should be organized and where it should be in which Mesechlis. They put it all together, and that's what we have. First we had Mishnayos Brachas. For about 300 years we just had Mishnah. And then, a couple hundred years later, Ravina Ravashi said, you know what, we have to get some more text on the table, and therefore we have the Gemara. And again, the Gemara, if you look at it, is all the discussions about what does the Mishnah mean, and how is this Mishnah arguing with that Mishnah, and this Mishnah argues on a Brisa, but now we know. Much of the Gemara, which hopefully we're going to talk about in the second part of the Shiur, which we're going to get to, is how could this Amora, the Amoraim in the Gemara, how could he say what he says? Isn't there a contradictory Mishnah? You know why he's asking that? Because the Mishnah was from an earlier stage of the Masorah. So we're going to get to, was he allowed to argue on a Mishnah? That's going to be part of the topic of our discussion. So that is the Gemara. Again, feel free with any questions to pipe in. After the Gemara came a period, now it gets, those are the major stages, as we'll talk about, the writing of the Mishnah and the writing of the Gemara, the Talmud. Then came a period of time of about 400 or 500 years called the period of the Gaonim. The Gaonim. There's a little period some historians say called the Savoraim. We don't know much about them. But the Gaonim were from basically a short time after the Gemara until about the year, if you see, 950 of the Common Era. I wrote where I wrote the Dalit. Anybody with the name Gaon at the end of his name was from this time period. Rav Shrira Gaon, Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Nisim Gaon, Rav Hai Gaon. Anybody with any of these names, you know, from that time period. There's only one Gaon that's not from that time period. The Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon might be the same as Gaon. He was from the 1700s, which we'll get to a little later. But many say that he had the mind of a Gaon. That's why they called him the Vilna Gaon. But his real name was Rav Eliyahu Kramer. But he was from Vilna. But he was later. But the Gaonic period was from that time period. The Gaonim did not really, they might have, but we do not have much of their works. That's why we have a few things here and there written by the Gaonim. We really don't have much that they wrote. There's a letter of Rav Shrira Gaon. That's sometimes they study in schools. Igeris Rav Shrira Gaon. But besides that, the Gaonim don't really have much. That's why they're not really quoted so much in Halacha, in the Shulchan Aruch. Because they might have written, but we just don't have it. So we can't base Halacha on it. But that was the period of the Gaonim. The ones that really brought the Gemara to the forefront is the period of the Rishonim. And that's by Osei, and that was from about the year 950 till, again, these are just random numbers. Some people, it's about these, some people give or take a few years. About the year 950 till about the year 1492 by the Spanish Inquisition when the Abarbanel and others were thrown out of Spain. That's usually one of the cutoff points that is discussed. Those 500 years was the period of the Rishonim. And again, all the famous Rishonim that we have all heard of lived at this time period. I split it up, if you see, just four columns of countries where the Rishonim lived. Again, there are more, but there are four major places where the Rishonim lived. And this is not in chronological order, but if you just see, I wrote Spain, France, Germany, and southern France was a separate country at that time, Provence. So that's you see, the different columns. On the right, Spain, the Rif, the Rambam part of the time, the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ran, the Rosh, the Tur, all of these were Rishonim. They were either the Rosh, and the next column, Rashi, in France, Rashi, and Rashi's grandchildren, Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was Rashi's grandson. The Rashbam was Rabbeinu Tam's brother. The Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam were brothers, both grandchildren of Rashi. So if you, Rabbi Wine has a beautiful video about for children, about and for adults also, about Rashi. You can buy it in any farm store. Right, about the story, about the life of Rashi. This is probably this year is a big year also because this summer is Rashi's 900th yard site. They're having, that's why I know the Young Israel is having these weeks a few shiurim on Rashi. This summer Tammuz is Rashi's 900th yard site. He was nifter in 1105. So that's so you see in the Rishonim. He was in the early part of the Rishonim. So So they have a cartoon there, not a cartoon, part of the video is a picture of Rashi, and he has a little Yaakov sitting on his lap. Rabbi Natan is known for vociferously many times arguing on his grandfather. You look at a page of the Gemara, you see Tosfos says Rashi says this, Rabbi Natan says how could you say that? Then he starts screaming. But it was his grandfather, it was his Zaidi. So one of the more famous machloksim arguments between Rashi and his grandson Rabbi Natan is about tefillin, about the order of the different. There are four parshios in the tefillin. What order it's supposed to be in? So that's why many Hasidim have the minhag of wearing two tefillins. They have Rashi tefillin, they have Rabbi Natan tefillin. Most non Hasidic sects that we're Rashi tefillin. But again, that's where this comes up: Rashi and Rabbi Natan. So in the video they have a little picture of Rabbi Natan sitting on his Zaidi's lap, and all of a sudden, and Rashi was tefillin all day like they used to do, and all of a sudden you see Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yaakov, picking the tefillin off of his grandfather's head and running away with it. So Rashi says, I think I know what this means, or something like. But that's Rashi and Rabbi Natan. They started they were the starters of our Mesorah, but they were in the Rishonim. You see, they were in France. Then moving over to the left is the in Ashkenaz in Germany. You have some other Rishonim, not as famous, but other Rishonim, the Arzarua, the Ravya, the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid has a famous will. Many things that. That many people hear about, but it's not in Shulchan Aruch always. It's from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, cutting your nails on cutting your toenails and fingernails the same day, getting a haircut on Rosh Chodesh. Many things that that aren't so clear in Shulchan Aruch come from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Finally, to the left in southern France, Provence, is the Meiri, the Ravid, others, but these are all Rishonim. Yeah. So Tosfos, there are two different Tosfos. There are French Tosfos and German Tosfos. So Rabbi Natan and the Rashbam, they're Tosfos. They're Baalei HaTosfos. So there, but they're so Tosfos. I should have written it, but because Tosfos isn't one person, Tosfos is a group of people. And on every Masechta, it's different people talking. So all of Rashi's grandchildren in that time period were Tosfos. They were French Tosfos and they were German Tosfos. Those are the two main groups. But that was all in the period of the Rishonim, these 500 years. They had a certain authority. And when a Rishon says something, it's different than, as we'll see, an Achron says something. Just like if something's in a Mishnah, it's different than if it's said by a Rishon. It's different. But again, that's the next stage of the Mesorah. But it's always important to know, whenever we have a halachic discussion, to know what does it say in the Torah, what does it say in the Mishnah. It's always to know the history of the halacha. And the Gaonim, again, we don't have so much work from the Gaonim. That's why there's not much written about them. Then we have the Rishonim, and finally, just one more before we get to the Achronim, just two or three general points about the Rishonim. Most of what we have from the Rishonim is commentary on the Gemara. That's most of what they did. Ramban, the Rashba, the Rivan, that's most of what they did. But there were two other major areas which some of them took part in. Number one is we have about 10 different lists of the mitzvos. Everybody agrees that there are 613 mitzvos. That's a Gemara. It's a Gemara in Makos. What are those mitzvos? That's a major machlokas. There are 10 different lists. The Rambam has a list. The Ramban has a list. The Sefer HaChinuch has a list. So that's besides writing commentaries on Gemara. So I showed you, I have here notes. Most Rishonim wrote Pirushim al Shas, commentaries on the Gemara. Some also wrote Minyan HaMitzvos. Some wrote, lists of the 613. It's important to know. Is this a mitzvah? Is that a mitzvah? What do you count? What do you not count? Ramban, Chinuch. So I gave you a list of a few of the minyan mitzvos. And what's more important than that, even in terms of halacha l'maisa, is that some of them not only wrote commentaries on the Gemara, but they wrote sifrei psak. They wrote and told us what to do. They didn't just tell us what does the Gemara mean, but they told us there are 10 different opinions in the Gemara. This is what you do. We have three major works in the Rishonim. Sifrei Psak, and that's the Rush, the Rambam, and the Rif. I don't know if I wrote those. Oh, I wrote those, yes, in the parentheses. Rush, Rambam, Rif. Those are the three main Rishonim who decided that we live today. The Gemara has 10 different opinions. What do we do? The Rambam said what we should do, the Rush said what we should do, and the Rif said what we should do. The Rif is Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. That's what it stands for. The Rush stands for Rabbeinu Asher. The Rif is Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and the Rambam is Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. So those three were there. So just to give you the history again, it's important. How do we get what we do today? The tour, as he's known, but let's go by his name, Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the Rush, right? Decided that Klal Yisrael can't live having a Rambam and a Rif and a Rush, three different major great giants. So some Jews are going to don't like the Rambam, and some Jews are going to go like the Rif, and some Jews are going to like the Rush. I need to compile it into one Sefer, so that all of Klal Yisrael could read one Sefer, and be able to have it in front of them, and that will be easier for them. Because here's a Rambam, and here's a Rush, and here's a Rif. So that's why Rav Yaakov, the son of the Tur, came up with his Sefer, known as the Tur. Known as the Tur, it's real. What is the Tur? Tur means a pillar. Tesvav Reish means a pillar. But if you see on the right side, I wrote Rav Yaakov Baal HaTurim. Right, Rav Yaakov, the one who wrote the pillars. What does that mean? He wrote a Sefer encompassing all of Halacha. Everything. And he fitted into four different books. Four categories. He put all of Halacha. He put Hilchos Purim. He put taking charging interest. He took Hilchos Nida. He took Avelos. Everything. Everything in Halacha that we do in life, he took and he organized into four different books. And that's called the Tur. It's really the Arba Turim, the four Turim. And those four books, I'm sure many of you have heard of it and use them. Rabbi Yaakov, under it, you have the four books listed. Choshen Mishpat, which is all about monetary cases. That's Dine Mamanis, all monetary law. Number two is Evan HaEzer, and that is all halachos related to relationships between men and women, which has to do with marriage, and Rachmana Lislan divorce, and Ksuba, and Puravu, and all other halachos that relate to relationships between men and women. That's Evan HaEzer. Yoredeya is all about Isser V'Heter. It's all about Hilchos Kashrus and Hilchos Nida and other halachos that have to do with Isser V'Heter. What's kosher, what's not kosher. Shatnez. All of that is in Yoredeya. So that's about Isser V'Heter. What's Mutter, what's Aser. And finally, Arachayim. Arachayim is daily life. Goes from the morning till the night, all the Yomim Tovim, all Tisha B'Av and Sukkot and Chanukah and Purim. That's all in Orach Chaim. I mean, the way of life. But that's what the Tur did. So the Tur took all the, his father was the Rush. So he took the Rush, he took his father's work, and he took the Rambam, and he was a later Rishon. He took the Rambam and the Rush and the Rif, and he took all the works, and he took many others, and he organized them into these four categories. And he writes, and he has a Siman Aleph, and a Siman Beis, and a Siman Gimel. And that's that was the next major step in the halachic history, in the history of halacha. Again, you had the Mishnah, you had the Gemara, now you have all the Rishonim that explain the whole Gemara, but what do we do? Sometimes you read something, there are 15 different opinions, you know, in something. So what do you do? So the Tur compiled all the different opinions in an organized way. He didn't tell you what to do yet. If you open up a Tur, and the Tur says, how many hours do you have to wait between milk and meat, just as an example, which we had a shiur about a few months ago, I think, the Tur will say, well, the Rambam says this, and the Rush says this, and the Rif says this, so you still don't know what to do. But at least he compiled all the opinions in an organized way, so we know where to find it. That was the Tur's contribution to halachic history. But what we needed, though, and what's left, what do we need? We still need to know what to do. You know, you can't look at a Tur and have 10 different opinions. But this is where the Rishonim ended their work. This is where the Rishonim ended their work. There is nothing after the Tur. The Tur was a late Rishon, the son of the Rush. And after the Tur, now we come to the age of the Achronim. The Achronim, which we're kind of still in the age of the Achronim. We don't know when it's going to end. You don't really know when a period is finished until you get to the next period. And then you can look back and say, oh, this was the Rishonim didn't know that they were Rishonim. They know that they were them. That we get to the Achronim now, and that's basically where we have been for the past 500 years or so. And there are early Achronim, there are later Achronim, but one of the early Achronim, is it moving? One of the early Achronim is Rav Yosef Kairo. Rav Yosef Kairo, who basically made his mark on Jewish history. If you look in the Achronim I just wrote early, he says Mechaber, that's Rav Yosef Kairo. Rav Yosef Kairo said, the Tur was amazing. He did a great job. He split all of Halacha into four different categories. But I need to tell the Jewish people what to do. So therefore, he used the same exact structure as the Tur. The Shulchan Aruch and the Tur have the same exact structure, the same exact numbering system. Siman Aleph in the Tur is parallel to Siman Aleph in the Shulchan Aruch. It's the same. If this Siman talks about Hilchas Sukkah, then this Siman in the Tur, then this Siman talks about Hilchos Sukkah in the Shulchan Aruch. It's parallel. Whenever you're learning something, first you look at the Tur, because you see 15 different opinions. Then you look at the Shulchan Aruch to know what to do. The Shulchan Aruch basically goes one opinion. 99% of the time he'll say, this is what you do. So that was the Shulchan Aruch. He was an early Achron, Rav Yosef Kairo, lived in Tzfat. He took all the opinions and he decided what to do. How did he decide what to do? You know, if you have the Rambam and the Rif and the Rosh and the Rashba and the Ramban, so how do you decide what to do? So the basic rule of thumb that he had was, he took the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh, those three major players, he looked at what they said about something, and most of the time he went 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3, the majority, if 2 out of them said something, so that's what he paskin like. If the Rambam and the Rosh were against the Rif, he paskin like the two. Sometimes, he went, even if the Rambam was by himself, he went with the Rambam. Because he was a very big Rambam man, the Shulchan Aruch. So sometimes, even if the Rosh and the Rif argue on the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch will still paskin like the Rambam. But that is what the Shulchan Aruch does. He took all of Halacha and he told us what to do. That is why the Shulchan Aruch is so important for our life today. Again, there's a funny Halacha. When we used to live in Borough Park. So I remember one time when we were first married, so I was right before Sukkot, we were going to my in-laws to Sukkot. So I remember one of the reasons we went is that they have one of these sliding roofs, so it's a room that you can sleep in. It has a heater, so it's great to sleep in the sukkah. You know, you don't feel like you're in a sukkah, but you still get the mitzvah because it's still a sukkah. So I remember we were leaving the house before Sukkot, and our landlord, who saw us leaving, he's like, "Oh, why are you going away for sukkah?" And I said, "Yeah, well, I like to sleep in the sukkah." So on sukkah, so he says, "Oh yeah, you follow the Shulchan Aruch." So I said, "Yeah, I do." So I was very proud. But that's how we live our life. We live our life based on the Shulchan Aruch. Even today, 500 years ago, there are many opinions in the Gemara. And you could discuss a lot of the opinions. And it's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah to discuss all of the opinions in the Gemara and in the Rishonim. But how do we live our life? We live our life primarily by the Shulchan Aruch. But just one Hosafa that we have to add in, the Shulchan Aruch, as we said, went like the Rambam, even sometimes if he argued with the other two. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, who I wrote right down next to the Mechaber, the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, looked at the Shulchan Aruch. He lived a little bit after the Shulchan Aruch, and he said, "You know what? This is a great sefer, but I have Ashkenazic roots," says the Ramah. "I live in Poland, and what the Shulchan Aruch says is based on a lot of Sephardic customs, and many times the Ashkenazim do not have the same customs. So I'm going to take the Shulchan Aruch, that's a wonderful sefer, but I'm going to fill in, I'm going to write my own notes to the Shulchan Aruch and fill in wherever Ashkenazim have a different minhagim and hold like different opinions. Maybe the Shulchan Aruch is going like the Rambam, but my tradition goes like the Rosh," says the Ramah. So that is the Mechaber and the Ramah, now they're a team. Whenever you open up the Shulchan Aruch, the bold type is going to be the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, is the smaller type in between, because he had to fill in the what was missing after the Shulchan Aruch did what he did. That's the Ramah, and it's interesting just the names of the Svarim. So the Shulchan Aruch is called the Shulchan Aruch, the set table. The Ramah, this is not as well known, the Ramah named his commentary. If you look on the first page of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah's commentary, anybody know what it's called? It's called the Mapa, the tablecloth. Because the Shulchan Aruch was set, but the Ramah says, "I'm going to put on the tablecloth. I'm going to finish doing the table to be able to fill in what was missing." So that was the addition of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So again, just to finish up now, and this we're going to end this part of the shiur. After that, there are many commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch and later commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. That's where we get names like the Taz and the Shach and the Magen Avraham, and a couple, 200 years later, you have the Middle Achronim, from like the 1700s or so. The Shagas Aryeh, and the Chacham Tzvi, and the Gra, this is the Vilna Gaon lived here, and Rabbi Kiva Eger, and the Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, and Rabbi Yonatan Eibishitz, all these were Middle Achronim. Okay, I just gave you a few as an example, but there are many books written about this time period. And then, finally, you get to the later Achronim, over the past 200 years. And that's the Aruch HaShulchan, you see later the Mishneh Berurah, Chafetz Chaim died in the 1930s. And the Meshech Chachma, who died at about 1910, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Malbim, and the very recent Achronim, some living, some not, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was Nifter in 1986, the Tzitz Eliezer, who lives in Ramot today, the Mincha Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Rav, Rav Yossi Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, and many, many other Achronim. But again, this is just an overview of halachic history. So now when we hear somebody and we talk about somebody, we got to know who we're talking about. So if I had asked on an extra credit question on one of my midterms a few years ago, I remember I said, "Okay, put in order Mishneh Torah, Mishneh Berurah, Mishnah." So I got to know what's going on there. So you got to know the Mishnah, and the Mishneh Torah is the sefer that the Rambam wrote, and the Mishneh Berurah is what the Chafetz Chaim wrote. So that there are like there's many, many hundreds of years between each of those svarim. But it's important to know. A lot of times you're in a bed-based marriage and you'll ask, how could he say this? The Chafetz Chaim says the Mishnah Berurah. The Chafetz Chaim lived 500 years after him. You know, the Rambam is allowed to argue on the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is not allowed to argue on the Rambam. But again, you always got to know where people were in Jewish history. Okay, so this is any questions, but this is the general overview of the Mesorah. So again, you could tell all my students just to keep this in the front of whatever text they're learning, but you could just put this in your files and have it for future reference. Okay, so now let us at least talk a little bit about the topic that I wanted to discuss tonight. And that is, so we just spent some time going through the whole history of halacha. The Mishnah, the Tanakh, that was first, and the Mishnah, can't forget Tanakh, and then the Mishnah, and the Gemara, and the Rishonim, the Akronim. Were there any magical stages of the Mesorah? Like, let's say, you know, I want to argue on some, on a Rishon. Am I allowed to argue on a Rishon? And if not, why not? Is a Rishon allowed to argue on the Gemara? Is an Amora allowed to argue on a Mishnah? If you look at every page in the Gemara, it basically asks, how could this Amora say such a thing? There's a Mishnah against him. So it sounds like that he's not allowed to, but is that, you know, why isn't he allowed to, if he's not allowed to? Was there some magical, you know, stage of the Mesorah? Like, we've gone through everything. Is there, like in the year 500, you know, what about the Shulchan Aruch? So what exactly, is there any significance to any of these stages? That is what we're going to try to tackle tonight, and we're specifically going to discuss two of the stages, I think two of the most significant stages, which was the Ksivas HaMishnah, Rebbe, and the Stimas HaTalmud, and the Gemara together. As we will see, those two are very significant. Everything after that is on a very different level. You have the Mishnah, you have the Gemara, and after that is very different. You have the Shulchan Aruch, which basically we go by the Shulchan Aruch today. But as we'll see in the sources, those are the two very very special stages. Okay, so let's go to source number one, and now on the sheets. Again, we're not going to do all the sources, but at least let's get through some of them. So the Rambam in source number one, Hilchas Mamrim, says something which begs the question, which we mentioned a few minutes ago. Let's read the Rambam first. Bez din hagadol shadarshu ba'achas min amidos. Let's say the great Sanhedrin, the great court in Yerushalayim, decide a certain halacha. Right? Today the Supreme Court is deciding whether the Ten Commandments should be allowed on the court buildings. Right now they're deciding that. Is that a separation of church and state? Top news story. So here, let's say the great courts are the real great courts that sits in the Beis HaMikdash. They decided a certain halacha. They said, this is how you should use crock pots on Shabbos. They said, this is how hot plates should be used. They came out with a certain psak. Therefore, it's binding on all Klal Yisrael. Once the Beis HaGadol says something, then there's no room for other opinion. So let's say they say something. V'danu din, and they said what they thought the halacha is. V'amar acharei Beis Din Acher, and then another court after them, later in history, gets up. V'nira lo tamacher l'storoso adin. They think the other way. They think it's mutter. Early Bezin said it was Aser, they think it's Mutter. You know, they thought this was a problem, they thought it's not a problem. It's a later time in history. So what did the Rambam say? Hareza Soser Vidun Kafima Shayira Be'enov. The later Bezin has the authority to say what it feels. If they feel the halacha should be a certain way, that's it. They're the Bezin HaGadol. Every generation goes by the logic that they feel. If they went through the sources, and they feel the halacha should be a certain way, so that's it. The halacha is that way. That's what the Rambam says. If this is the case, though, then, asks many mefarshim on this Rambam, we have a problem with a lot of Gemara. Because as I mentioned before, almost every page of Gemara says, how could this Amora say something? It's against the Mishnah and the Amorim from the time of the Gemara. So how could he say it? What do you mean? The Rambam just says he could always say it. The Rambam says, if you feel the halacha is a certain way, you know, if Moshe Feinstein feels that he's going to argue on the Chassam Sofer, who lives 200 years before him, he has the right to, from the Rambam seems to say. And if a Rishon feels that an earlier rabbi was wrong, then it sounds like from the Rambam that he's allowed to argue. Right, so the question is, so what do you do with all Gemara? All Gemara seems not that way. So, how do you understand this? So So if you look in source number 2, the Kesef Mishnah, okay, again, remember the Rambam we saw in source number 1 from the time of the Rishonim. Now the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah was written by Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the same author of the Shulchan Aruch. I even gave it to you on that other sheet that I gave you out. Rabbi Yosef Cairo wrote 3 major works. The Shulchan Aruch is his famous work, but he has 2 other pretty famous works. On the other sheet, right next to where I wrote the tour, I wrote Rabbi Yosef Cairo, and you see under him 3 books. The Kesef Mishnah al HaRambam. The Kesef Mishnah is his commentary on the Rambam. Beis Yosef al Tur. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, is his commentary on the tour. And the Shulchan Aruch, obviously, is his magnum opus. Those are the 3 books for Rabbi Yosef Cairo. So here, in source number 2, the Kesef Mishnah and his commentary on the Rambam says, where it's underlined on line 15, V'yim Tomar, I'm going to ask you a question. If it's true that the Rambam says that a later court is always allowed to argue in an earlier court, Amailo pligi amoroi atanoi. So why don't the Amoraim, why aren't they allowed to argue on the Tanoim? No, it seems like they can't. The question is why? You need more. There are more sheets if you need. Okay. So why can't they argue? Amailo pligi. Every 4th line of the Gemara, Shas would be much smaller if this was the case. The Gemara would just say they're allowed to. The Gemara goes to so far to try to figure out how an Amora is not arguing on a Mishnah. Or not arguing on a Brisa, right? Because it's all from that earlier time period. So why not? The Rambam says anybody can say what they want. So says the Kesef Mishnah something amazing, which most Mefarshim reject. This idea, but he says his opinion. The Efshar Lomar, line 20, Shemiyom Chasimas HaMishnah, from the day that the Mishnah was written, Kimu V'Kiblu, there was an acceptance amongst the generations. Shedoros HaAchronim Lo Yachloku Al HaRishonim. There was an acceptance that they wouldn't argue on the earlier generation, but not that they couldn't argue on the earlier generation. That is what Rabbi Yosef Cairo says. Because the Mishnah says, really, any Amora could argue on a Mishnah. He's allowed to. He has the authority to. But they wouldn't. They wouldn't argue on a Mishnah. So when the Gemara says, how can he say it? It doesn't mean, how can he say it? It's, he can't. How can he do it? I thought that the Amoraim wouldn't argue on the Gemara. V'chein asu gam b'chassimas ha-Talmud. He even says, we're going to get to this in a few minutes, also the Gemara, Bizman ha-Gemara. Remember, now we know, Rabbi Yosef Cairo lived long after the 1,000 years after the Gemara was finished. So he says, miyom chassimas, shemom shenechtam, lo nitan reshus l'shemadam l'achol galav. So the haskama is, the simple reading of the Kesef Mishnah, is that they were allowed to, but they wouldn't. Based on this Rambam. See, that is what the Kesef Mishnah says. To save time, we're not going to do source number 3, but that is, in source number 3, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, who's the one of the Brisker dynasties, who lived about 100 years ago. So he also says that really an Amora is fundamentally allowed to argue on a Tana. An Amora is allowed to argue on a Mishnah, but they wouldn't. There was a Haskama that they wouldn't. These are the minority approach. The minority approach says that they're really allowed to, but they wouldn't. What most sources say is that really, after there was the Ksivas HaMishnah, when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wrote that, there was no longer any argument. And just like, and it's put this way in source number 4, just like you're not allowed to argue on Tanakh, that's Torah Shebichsav, when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah that gained the status, in a semi-type way, of Torah Shebichsav. And therefore one is not allowed to argue on anything in the Mishnah. And when the Gemara asks, how can he say this? Isn't there a Mishnah against it? He's saying because he can't say it. Because when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah, that was a significant halachic stage of Amar Sora. Something changed at that moment of the year 200. It wasn't just like all the other years that Torah has passed down. That was just a certain stage of the halachic Masora. And now let's see a number of sources that point in this direction. Okay. Let's turn the page for a minute and see this. Sorry, in source number 5, again, I gave you a number of sources to read afterwards, but we're just going to skip around to read some of the sources. See where on the third line on the top right. Again, I feel like I'm talking too much, so feel free to interject. Avol hadavar muvan al pi ma shekasavnu lamala. Let me explain what I. Oh, and I didn't say who this is. This is the Dor Ravi. The Sefer called the Dor Ravi'i, is source number 4 and source number 5. He is a great-great-great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer. That's why he's called the Dor Ravi'i, the fourth generation. He is a great, great, great grandson of the Chassam Sofer. So he wrote a sefer. I guess he wanted a pot. You know, he's connecting himself to his great, great grandfather. Obviously, if it was the Chassam Sofer, anybody would. But that is the name of the sefer he wrote. This is a sefer on Maseches Chulin. So he writes this lashon. Look at this language at the end of line three. The high heter ksiva, eino kishar mitzvah olav she'akru. When Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah, it wasn't like he just decided to do something, and it didn't have any major ramifications. Remember, I didn't even mention this before. There's a halacha that you're not allowed to write down Torah Shebal Peh. It's supposed to be Torah Shebal Peh. It's supposed to be passed on from Rebbe to Talmud. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi really was violating something when he wrote down the Mishnah. But you know, we have a certain principle when the Jewish people are in danger, you're allowed to violate certain halachos. Like, for example, Eliyahu HaNavi, we read in last week's Haftorah, I think, a very long Haftorah, Eliyahu HaNavi, when many of the Jews were worshipping the Baal, worshipping this Avodah Zarah, so Eliyahu HaNavi had to prove to them that they were wrong. And it was a time period when you weren't allowed to build a Mizbeach outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It's an Isser Bamos. Once we have a Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to build. Before we had a Beis HaMikdash, then you could go to your backyard and wood mirror and build a Mizbeach and sacrifice to Hashem. That's fine. But once we have a Beis HaMikdash, then it's all over. So Eliyahu HaNavi lived at a time when there was an Isser to build a Mizbeach outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But the Navi describes that he went up on this on Har HaKarmel, big mountain. It wasn't Har HaMoriah. It wasn't where the Beis HaMikdash was. He built a big Mizbeach, and he told the Jews who lived in the Baal to build a big Mizbeach. It's a great story. And he tells them, you know, okay, sacrifice to your God, and, you know, call for a fire to come down from heaven, and let's see whose God is right. And he said they start calling and calling and calling, and they're waiting for their God, the fire, to come down. And it's amazing, the Navi having sarcasm. Eliyahu Navi says, maybe scream louder, maybe your God is sleeping. That's why, if you read the Psukim, that's what he says. And they scream and scream and scream in a boker to error from morning till night, and obviously nothing happens. So Eliyahu Navi says, you ready? It's my turn now? So Eliyahu Navi says, okay. But then he says, okay, gather round. And what happened? It says that he brought hundreds and hundreds of pails of water, and he poured it on the Mizbeach. He made the Mizbeach soaking, totally drenched in water. And then he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Anini Hashem, Anini Hashem, answer me. And all of a sudden, a fire comes down from Shemayim, burns the whole Mizbeach, and takes it up to heaven. After it's soaking, and all of Am Yisrael says, Hashem, Olokim, we believe in God. So wonderful, now believe so, believe in God. But he violated the Nisa Daraisa. You're not allowed to build a Mizbeach outside the Beis HaMikdash, where there's a Beis HaMikdash. So what's the answer? The answer is, when the Jewish people are in danger, spiritual or physical danger, you're allowed to violate. The Gdolei HaDar can violate a certain Aveira. We can't do this. But the Eliyahu HaNavi can. So it's the same thing with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is an Isser to write down Torah Shebachsav, to write down Torah Shebal Peh. But he looked around and said, there's not going to be any Jews in 100 years if it's not written down. You know, you have to make the Torah able to be transmitted. And that's similar to what the Navi Mitzker Rebbe mentioned last night at the CM, the godless of the art school Gemara. How many thousands and thousands of people are learning Gemara? You know, who wouldn't? Obviously, not supposed to. Somebody who can learn Gemara without the art scroll, they're not supposed to be using the art scroll. They're supposed to be working through the Gemara. But how many thousands and thousands of Jews, you know, wouldn't open a Gemara without it? It's not like there's a choice between a Gemara. The only Gemara that they would have a Havamina of opening. Why? That's also, it's part of the continuation, the continuity of Torah. So says the Doravi now, getting back to this. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote it, it wasn't just like a little thing that he wrote it. Ella, look at the fourth line. Ella al yedei heter ksiba, through the writing, asu mi Torah shebal peh, Torah shebichsav. He took a piece of Torah shebal peh, and by writing it down, he made it into something that can sit. It's not Tanakh, obviously, but it has the status of Torah shebichsav in that you're not allowed to argue on it. If it says something in the Mishnah, the only way you can argue on it is if you have a different Mishnah that says something else. He forbade any Bezdin later on in history not to be argue on anything that it says in the Mishnah. They can explain the Mishnah in different ways. The Gemara sometimes has 10 different explanations of what does the Mishnah mean, but they're not allowed to argue on the Mishnah. They could just interpret the Mishnah in various ways. And then he goes in to explain why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi felt it. He felt that the Jews were going into Galus now, and the non-Jewish society is going to infiltrate the minds of even the greatest scholars. So it's best to have more in writing so that we don't get too much off the track. So That's why he says Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah. Another So that has to do with, did we have that shear of Elu Ve'elu? Did we look him Chaim? Did we give that, I think I might have given that shear a while ago. But again, that's the, how Hashem gave the Torah with different opinions. That's because the different opinions are important for different generations. There are different ways to view things. And obviously it's hard to, in math, you don't have something that says, you know, there are multiple truths. You know, 2 + 2 is only 4. You know, in any other science, you don't have multiple truths. But in Torah, there is. That's what we get. Just to mention one source that we did then, the Maharami Prague gives an example. Let's say we're talking about a tree. And you say the tree, what makes the tree grow? You tell me water makes the tree grow. And somebody else tells me the sun makes the tree grow. Somebody else tells me the moisture makes the tree grow. The nutrients. So who's right? The answer is we're all right. But we're looking at it from different ways and with different viewpoints. So says the Maharami Prague, that's Torah. Torah is something that everybody has their own viewpoint from. Some people think this about Torah, some people think that about Torah, but that's, as long as somebody is somebody who can have an opinion, not everybody can have an opinion. If somebody has not spent their time in the Beis Medrash, they can't just say, oh, I think it's Mutter. You know, that's, anybody can say that, but it's wrong. But if somebody can have an opinion, so they're allowed to. But that's how Hashem made it. Hashem made it that there are different opinions in the Torah. One other source that talks about the stage of the Mishnah. Again, this is, an important Gemara for life. You'll go to source number 6. It's one line Gemara. Next page. Top of the page. Source number 6. The Gemara Sanhedrin. Tana Devei Eliyahu. Sheshes Alafim Shana Havi Alma. Says the Gemara, the world is going to be 6,000 years long. Right, we're already in 5,765. The Gemara says the world is going to be 6,000 years long. Shnei Alafim Tohu. The first 2,000 years is going to be Tohu. Is going to be a type of confusion, like Tohu Vavohu. Shnei Alafim Torah. The next 2,000 years is going to be Torah years, whatever that means. Shnei Alafim Yemos HaMashiach. And from the year 4,000 to 6,000 is going to be Yemos HaMashiach. That's the Gemara. So what's going on here? What does this mean? All right, we're obviously in the third one. But what does this mean? 2,000, 2,000, 2,000. So if you look in Rashi, in source number 7, it's a little cut off. I'll read it outside. Rashi explains you have 2,000 years of Tohu. What does that mean? That means before anybody recognized God. That was the first 2,000 years. Because if you work out the math, he says, Tachash lo nitna adayin Torah v'haya ha'olam katohu u'mei adam harishon ashahaya Abraham ben nud beis shana ika alpayim shana. Says Rashi, from Adam harishon until Avram Avinu was 52 years old was 2,000 years. The middle of Avram Avinu's life was the 2,000 year line, and that's when the years of Torah started, says Rashi, because that's when somebody finally recognized God. Rama Vinu recognized Mana, right? He looked around the sun and the moon. He knew there had to be a creator. That's when Torah years started. Around the year 2000, there were different opinions. When did Avram recognize God? When he was 3, when he was 48, when he was 52. Different opinions. But according to Rashi, that's when the Torah years started, at the year 2000. Then you have another 2,000 years, and Rashi continues and says, what happened at the year 4,000? Says Rashi, Torah didn't end. Torah really continues the last 2,000 years also. It's just that the last 2,000 years also have the possibility of Mashiach coming. That's what it means, the last 2,000 years of Mashiach. The last 2,000 also, but Rashi says, don't think that Torah ended. Tohu ended at the year 2,000. But Torah, because the last 4,000 years are really Torah, not just the middle 2,000. That's what Rashi explains. But if you look at the Maharsha, who's one of the Achronim from the 1700s, and the Torah Temima, who lived about 100 years ago or so, they both say, no. It's got to be parallel in the Gemara. If Tohu was the first 2,000, the Gemara says, and then Torah is the middle 2,000, and then it says Yemosha Mashiach of the last 2,000, so wouldn't, if Tohu ended at the year 2,000, so Torah must end at 4,000. So what do you mean Torah ended, though? We're not learning Torah now? So says the Marsha, if you work out the math, the year 4,000 is about 130 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. which means the year that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote the Mishnah. The year 4000, if you look at he works out the math. He says Anira Lafarish. He says on the it's a little letters. I'll read it. He says after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The year Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. He says about 172 years before. There were a couple years here and there, but it's about the year 4000 when there was the Ksivas HaMishnah. And says the Marsha, it says the Torah Tzvima, Torah ended then. Why? Because that finished a certain stage of the Mesorah. That was where the extension of Torah Shebichtav was written down. Everything after the Mishnah is explaining. But we have no longer any new opinions in Jewish life. So that's what it means. 2000. It works out. The year 4000 is when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote the Mishnah. So it is very significant, that stage. That's why the Gemara can't argue on the Mishnah. And a Rishon can argue. Nobody can argue on a Mishnah. Because a Mishnah is from those 2,000 years of Torah, and there was no arguing on those years. So that's basically what we assume, that the Ksivas HaMishnah was a major stage of the Mesorah. Okay, let's talk a few more minutes. Five more minutes. Okay. What about the Gemara? Was the Gemara a significant stage? What if we spoke, the Mishnah is the year 2000, but could you argue on the Gemara? Rabbi and Ravashi, they put it together, so is that allowed? So it seems like from the sources, again, we're not going to do all the sources to save time, but it seems like from the sources that one is not allowed to argue on the Gemara either. And after the Gemara, so then, it's not a free-for-all, but it's much more flexible. Much more flexible to argue for discussions of the great rabbis, the Rishonim and the Achronim, to have discussions of opinions. But the Mishnah was definitely a halachic stage and significance. It was the year 4000 or so, and the Gemara also seems to be an important stage. If you look at source number 13, I'm not going to do all the sources. I don't want to go so much over time. If you look at source number 13. The Ramah in Choshen Mishpat, right? As we know Choshen Mishpat now, and we know the Ramah, right? So now we know everything about these sources. So the Ramah, Ramosha Israelis, in Choshen Mishpat writes, Nihu, Yesh Omrim de'imnira l'dayin l'b'nei doro mikoch rayos makrachos, if it appears to a judge and to the people in his generation through proofs. They've gone through the sugi. They've gone through the sources. She'ein adin kamo shehuzkar b'poskim. They decide that the halacha is not like what is found in the earlier poskim. And this you find the number of finds. Moshe Feinstein, you read some of his truvos. Moshe Feinstein was the gadol dar of our generation. And sometimes he'll quote you all the sources. He'll quote a Chassam Sofer who lived 200 years earlier, and he'll say, I don't agree with the Chassam Sofer. I don't agree. I interpret it differently. Moshe is allowed to. Moshe is Moshe. No, he's on par with the Chassam Sofer. So says the Ramah, Yachol Lachlok Alav. He is allowed to argue. Rav Moshe is allowed to argue on the Chassam Sofer. Rav Moshe is allowed to argue on Rabbi Kiva Eger. Why? What's the limit? Me'achar she'eno nizkar b'gemara. The Ramah says, because after all, what the earlier people said is not in the Gemara. In other words, what's implicit in the Ramah? If it would be in the Gemara, then there's no arguing. So the Gemara as well, not just the Mishnah, was in a significant stage, but also anything found in the Gemara. And that is why there's such importance, where we have the whole Daf HaYomi. We don't have, there's not as much emphasis on other Yomi, studying other Svarim, because the Gemara is the basis of it all. The Gemara has the Mishnah in it. As I said, not all the Mishnayos have Gemara, but the majority of Mishnayos have Gemara in it, and that's where our life comes from. That's why we have such emphasis on studying the Gemara. All of life, all of halacha, that's for men and for women. It all starts in the Gemara. The Gemara is it, and we're not allowed to argue on the Mishnah, and we're not allowed to argue on the Gemara. There's also just a very interesting tshuva. Again, I'm sorry, I don't have time to do all of this. There's a fascinating tshuva even. Go to source number 17. It's a great tshuva for many reasons. If there's anything about this year that you're going to remember, I think it's going to be this source, this tshuva. The tshuva of the Nodibi Yehuda in source number 17. He was asked, let's read the question. Halayla Hazeh, line 1 in source number 17. Halayla Hazeh, Higiani Mechtavcha, I got your letter. The Nodeb Yehuda's name was Rav Yecheskel Landau. He lived in Prague. Any of you have been to the Altnai Shul in Prague? They have a Kesser Torah from the Nodeb Yehuda. He was, it's out there, it was donated in his honor. He's from lived the early 1800s, end of the 1700s. So he says, I got your letter. Ashata Shoel Badabar Hashidduch. You're asking me about a certain Shidduch. Hamedubar Legisascha in Ben Torah, Vyachazan Raksha Bashaz, call you a Shinui Shame, Shalom, who Kashem Avi Absula. The problem is that the guy's going out with a girl whose father has the same name as him. So you want to know, the father in law and the son in law are going to have the same name. Is that okay? That's the Kashan of the Behuda got. It's a great Shidduch, but, you know, this is, what should we do? We've heard that there's some, like, you know, stuff going on with having the same name as the father-in-law and the son-in-law. So he says, what is the source of this whole discussion about a father-in-law, the same thing, daughter-in-law, mother-in-law? Where does this all come from? It comes from the Tzavar of Yehuda HaChassid, which I mentioned before. Yehuda HaChassid was one of the Rishonim. He wrote a Tzavar, a will, where he has a list of many, many things that some of which have found their way into Sfarim of Sifrei Psak. Not too many are in Shulchan Aruch. Not too many. But a few of them are in Shulchan Aruch, but this is one of them. You know, one of these father-in-law, daughter-in-law, son-in-law cases. So he says he wants to know what to do. So that's what the question is. So he says, Da, on line 5, I'll read it. The Talmidei Achaviv, listen, my dear student. Let my words be engraved on your heart to remember Haklal Hagadol She'ein L'Kol Chachamim She'achar HaTalmud Rishus Lomar Dabar Neged HaTalmud. No rabbi after the Gemara has the authority to say anything against the Gemara. That's why we're doing this now, but we're going to finish it because it's interesting. The Ha'omer Dabar Lissar Kutso Yud Medibar HaTalmud. If somebody after the Gemara says something to argue on a yud, the littlest letter in the Gemara, Lo Yichashi V'Chlal Chachmi Yisrael, then he's going against the entire Mesorah, and we throw him out of being one of the rabbis in the halachic Mesorah. You can't argue on the Gemara. He says clearly. That's why it has to do with what we're talking about. But Amnam, but what happens if you go through history and you find something that, you know, is against the Gemara from somebody who is muchzak to be a chacham? So he says you have one of two choices. Either you say that you have to reinterpret what you're saying. Really, he didn't argue on the Gemara. You have to try to figure out what he means. A, or maybe he was being machmir personally for his own family. But it's not like he's telling all of Klal Yisrael to go against the Gemara. Those are two options that you have. If you find a great rabbi who is known to be a Rav, and we don't have a suffix about that, who seems to be going against the Gemara, you either have to reinterpret what he's saying, or you have to say that he's only saying it for his family. So he says, says the Nodeb Yehuda, that's why we're doing this now, because he says clearly that point. But to just finish the Tshuva, he says, if you look through this Tzavar, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, there are many, many parts of this will that go against Mefurish Gemaras. Explicitly against Gemaras. He gives a number of examples where he says, Hu Omer Shelo Yisa Bas Achoso. He says, it's also to marry your niece. The Gemara says it's a mitzvah to marry your niece. Forgetting, Bizman HaZeh, what we know about diseases of interfamily marriage, but the Gemara says it's a mitzvah to marry your niece. He says it's usher to marry your niece. He says, how could you say it's usher if the Gemara says it's a mitzvah? Ki hu amer shalo yisa basachoso, etc. Hu amer shalo yisa avu beno shtei achayos. He says a father and a son can't marry two sisters. For a papa u beno nasu shtei benos. For a papa and a son marry two sisters. Meaning you have many cases in the Gemara. Hu amer shalo yisu beizach and beizachis. He says two brothers can't marry two sisters. The Gemara talks about it. Again, not that this is something that we would do. But just saying what the Gemara says is mutter or usser, you know, he gives many examples that it didn't have it, that goes against the Gemara. So he says it must be that he wrote this will for his family. He wrote this will because he saw with his Ruach HaKodesh that his family shouldn't have these type of zivugin, these type of shiduchim, so his family should do this. But he says none of this is binding on Klal Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says about everything in the will of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And even, this is for Shabbat Shuvah Drasha, in the second paragraph he says, just by the way, I've answered your shayla, but he says, I'm so upset, I get so many shaylas, he says, like this. He says, this is the shidduch, the father-in-law, the son-in-law, the same name. He says, nobody asked me, but she doesn't have good midos. Nobody asked me, but he doesn't have a good, nice family. Nobody asked me the important things about what you look for in a spouse. They asked me the name, it's the same name as the father, the son-in-law. Then what did they ask me about if they have Midos Tovos? Why don't they ask me if he sits in the base Medrash? That they don't ask me about. No, they just ask me about these questions. He says, I'd rather get the other questions. That's what he says in the next column. He says that the second to last line 22. V'tabahani al rov ha'olam. He says, I wonder about the majority of the world. Shalaseis bitam la'am ha'aretz. To give their daughter to a big Am Haaretz who doesn't know anything, who pashes that slum. They don't. That's wonderful. Great. Who cares? They have koshish limana. Right? That they don't care about. They care about if the father-in-law has the same name as the son-in-law. But they don't care if he doesn't know anything. He's not a shomer Torah mitzvos. He says that's also against a halacha. You have to make sure your children marry people who are proper and fitting b'nei Torah, but who neged divrei chazal. So he says that's why I'd rather get those kind of questions. But what's important for us from the tshuva is that he says you're not allowed to argue on the Gemara, and that's why he says even Rabbi Yehuda Chassid's tzava is not for all of Klal Yisrael. Again, so what we have seen tonight is that we saw an overview of Jewish history, but we also saw that the two stages of Beis and Gimel on your separate sheet are very important, significant stages in the Mesorah. You can't argue on the Mishnah, you can't argue on the Gemara. Everything after that is more, a little more flexible. The Gaonim, was that a separate stage? That's the question. It's not as clear. But what's clear is the Mishnah and the Gemara. And everything after that, the Rishonim, the Achronim, obviously, we can't argue. But obviously, if you're a Gadol Hadar, then there is more flexibility in terms of discussion of the halakhic topics. Okay, so listen, this is a little discussion about the history of halakha. We could have, again, like I said, 20 more. But for now, this will have to suffice. Hashem, next, probably, it'll be on the email, probably this Sunday before Purim. We'll have a Shir in Yoni Purim. And then the next one will be in Yoni Pesach. And then after that, I'm not sure. I'm starting Bishul B'Shabbos with the men after Pesach. So I'm not sure I'm going to do that with the women. It'll probably be a 3-week series or something like that. So I'm not sure. We'll have to figure out the dates when it'll work out. But that's on the schedule. It's made up of arguments, but if there is a clear Gemara that says something, you're right. It is made up of arguments, but let's say if there is a halacha in the Gemara, you're right, if there's an argument, then you can at least choose one opinion. You might have to go by the opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. But you're right, if there are two opinions in the Gemara, so then you have a little more flexibility. Okay? Yes. Right. So the tour, I didn't mention that, but Masar is right, the tour did not include halachas that were not nohag at that time. So he left out all the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, he left out all the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why also, just to mention, we don't have Gemaras on those Masechtas. Talmud Bavli, there is no Talmud Bavli on the halachas related to the Beis HaMikdash. Some of the Beis HaMikdash there is. There's a lot of Kashim, but in Yoni Zra'im, the mitzvahs that have to do with Eretz Yisrael, there is no Gemara on. And the Gemara, the halachas have to do with Taharos, Tumen Tahara. But that's because it wasn't Nohig then. They should learn it. We have to learn Kalos Arakula, even if something is... Women don't have to learn it. They want to, they have to. Women have to learn all four Turim. Right? You have to learn all of Shulchan Aruch. People say, oh, women don't have to learn. They're parted from the Talmud Torah. Women, right, women have to learn everything that's known to them. So that means Aruch Chaim, Eben Ezer, Choshen Mishpat, and Yerodeya. Once women are finished with all Isra V'Heter, and Hilchas Shabbos, and Hilchas Kasher, and Hilchas Mishpach, and Hilchas Avelis, and Hilchas... All the halachas, okay, they don't have to learn Hilchas, Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara, certain halachas, which they will, we will have to learn. Baruch Hashem, when we have a Beis HaMikdash, women are not going to have to know Tumah V'Tahara just like men have to know it. You know, we have to know what, if I'm going to have the cones over for Shabbos afternoon lunch, you know, I'm going to have to know if I'm a Nida and I'm touching my challah, I can't have the cones over. Right? It's going to be very halacha l'maisa. It's going to be, to know what's going on. So we think now it's that's why if you look in the, in the Bizman Beis HaMikdash, all the families, they all had mikvahs in their house, because it comes up much more often. Let's say you want to go to the Beis HaMikdash, you want to take a family trip, we have to plan. The man also could become tamei. You know, if the man happens to walk by a cemetery and he's under an overhanging tree and it's over the man's tamei. He has to wait 7 days and go to the mikvah. You think only Hilchas Chatzitza is for the women? It's going to be for the men also when the Beis HaMikdash comes. So that's another reason to daven for the Beis HaMikdash. Let the men have some of this. Okay.